All right, how long is too long to keep saying, hey, it's a long season, the Astros season, they're 41 games in now, so they're a quarter of a way through the season. This time a year ago, they were still struggling to get back to 500, at least as of last night, they're back above 500 again. 21-20, they'll try to win the series against the Royals, the three-game series tonight. They play Colton Gordon getting his first start. This question, though, was posed on Area 45 last night. Patrick Creighton, Sean Bajani do a great job with their night show here on Sports Radio 610. When do we stop saying, hey, when it comes to the Astros, don't worry, it's a long season?
I think one of the hardest things for fans is just the waiting game. It's like, you know this team can play better. You're kind of just waiting for them to hit that switch, I believe. Yeah. And it's like, okay, so when is it going to happen? Like you said, last year was around June, mid-June, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
This year,
June 18th. So, that was the last day they were asked last year.
So it's like, when are they going to hit that switch? Or can they? Sometimes you might get to the point to, can they hit that switch?
Well, that's a good point.
Okay. I think that was, that Chris Partee on them with them
yeah,
last
sorry,
night?
Yeah, sorry. I forgot that Patrick was out last
yep.
night. It's a good way to frame it. I think partly it's obviously not apples to apples because the Astros are above 500 right now. On June 18th last year, they were 33-40.
Mm-hmm.
That was when they started climbing out from seven games below 500. And
and killing that 10-game deficit. It coincided with Seattle being terrible as well.
Right,
thank God,
right,
you know?
Yeah. And so I guess for me, I mean, obviously mathematically, as long as they're above 500, you can keep pushing that, when is it too late for them to click, way on down the line. You could push it to September if you wanted to and still end up with some home playoff games.
They're a half game out. Like, I don't even know that having to have the take, hey, it's a long season, is even appropriate right now. Last season, it was appropriate. They were 12-24 to start the season, and they were one of the two or three worst teams in the American League, a place that they had not been. Even in the COVID year, they weren't that bad. They were a 500 baseball team. And so a quarter of the way into the season, they're one of the three or four worst teams in the American League. I don't even know that it's appropriate to point out to people right now, or that it's necessary to point out, like, hey, it's a long season. They're a half game out of the playoffs right now, and they're two games back at Seattle in the division. They could be in first place by the end of the week. You know?
Seattle's lead is not. It was whatever it rose to within the division.
It's that's, two games
that's
right now.
Started. They've reeled it right back in.
Yeah.
So everything is very close right now. I guess it doesn't become really a question of, oh my gosh, are they going to be in it or have a chance? As long as they could stay this exact same, just a little bit above 500 for a long time and then just kick it into gear. I think the question is more about, okay, emotionally, when do you feel like, all right, this team actually really genuinely does have a chance to be a better team than they were last year.
Yep.
And I feel like we've seen it with the offense. And as, you know, Paredes and Walker have looked different, as, you know, as long as Pena keeps thriving in the leadoff spot, Yiner looks a lot more like he did last year. That there's a lot of reasons for hope and optimism offensively that they can turn it around. For me, it's defensively, where the pitching was so good to start the season. It feels like right now you're on a razor's edge of it going one way or the other. That Framber and Hunter Brown look fine. Like they're going to be just fine. Yeah. But beyond that, it's a whole bunch of, man, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what version of Blanco, a healthy Arrigetti, Lance McCullers, my God, Gusto, Wisniewski, those are all huge question marks.
Well,
right now.
And it's injuries again. You know, it's Spencer Arrigetti's injured. We know he's going to come back at some point here, and his injury is not one that I worry about being. It's a broken bone that was a freak accident in the outfield on a road game this year. That isn't something I feel is going to pop up. If Wisniewski comes back from this sore elbow, which I'm not optimistic about, only because every sore elbow that an Astros starting pitcher has experienced in the last 3 years has turned into Tommy John surgery. All of them have turned into Tommy John. So going back to Justin Verlander in the COVID year, they've all turned into Tommy John surgery. That would be one where if he were to come back, I'd be like, all right, well, even if he comes back, it feels like it's a ticking time bomb, you know? I think to me, Seth, the biggest thing, because I think the pitching is going to be okay once they get Arrigetti back, and you know, they can make a move at the deadline. They picked up Kikuchi last year, and that we can't ignore the fact that Dana Brown could make a deal at the deadline. We'll see. To me, they need to get to a place offensively where a home run doesn't feel like this wow. Like, oh, like when Pena hit that home run last night to tie the game at one, it was like, wow, a home run. This team has Jeremy Peña leads them in home runs right now with 6 home runs on the season. Their leadoff hitter, their shortstop, who hits for some pop throughout his career, is right now leading them in home runs with 6. He's on pace for 24. Like, this is a team that has routinely had guys that hit 25, 30 home runs on the roster. They have no pop on this roster right now, especially with no Yordan Alvarez out there.
They're 13th in OPS right now, which is way better than they had been early in the season when they were down in the bottom. A lot of the offensive categories, they were really low for the first part of the season. They're right middle of the pack now in OPS, batting average. Like, and that's because they've been hitting above average compared to lift themselves up out of that. So I think that there's still hope there. And when guys are underperforming like they have, I guess Altuve's not been himself as of late. I expect that as he gets older, he's going to have some more stretches like the slump, like this year's slump. But that this is not going to be an all year thing for Jose Altuve.
No, and I don't think it's going to be an all year thing where there's this power shortage either. That, just to be clear, it needs to happen at some point. Like, they. Isak Paredes was a 30 home run guy last year. Christian Walker's been a 30 home run guy the last few years. Yordan Alvarez is one of the best hitters in all of baseball and certainly one of the most feared power hitters. Jose Altuve has been a 25 home run guy. Yainer Diaz was a 20 plus home run guy. Jeremy Peña has been a 20 plus home run guy. I'm probably missing, Jake Myers has shown a little bit of pop. Whatever the case may be, there's plenty of potential pop in this lineup. It's just been nothing so far in terms of juice with this lineup. Like, even when they score runs, they're scraping two sticks together all the time, you know?
They were 17th in April, they were 17th in OPS, so they haven't lifted themselves up that far. But 12th is better than 17th, Sean.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I'm just, like, putting OPS aside, I know slugging comes from home runs, which goes to OPS and whatnot. I'm just saying, in terms of in the past, they've been able to win baseball games with a swing of a bat or a couple swings of the bat. And they have to string stuff together right now, and that's really hard to do.
That's where I agree with you there, and they haven't been the same. But they are – so for the month of May so far in this very short – where in the last 6 games, they've been averaging 5 or 6 runs per game in the last 6 games. Yeah. So I'm a prisoner of the moment, and I feel like I have at least seen more production and more output. It might not be classically in the way that you want it, but like in the month of May, they're 6th. It's mostly just the very recent surge. They're 6th in OPS or 7th in OPS in the month
of
May. See,
this is where I feel like if this were football, and this is the equivalent, Seth, of someone saying, well, the Texans were 11th or 12th in DVOA, that your response would have appropriately been, how many points are they scoring?
Right.
You know, and that would be my thing with the OPS thing is, and I know recently they've scored more runs, to your point, but where are they right now for the season in runs scored?
Well, in May, they're 14th. Right. But the last 6 games, Sean.
No.
Asking for when are they going to click. I feel like offensively, even in that miserable Lance McCullers start, they scored how many runs?
They scored 9 runs in that game.
And they weren't all garbage runs. 5 of them were in the 3rd inning.
And And there was a home run in there somewhere and whatever. This is a sign of the decline right now, at least. You know what I mean? Like, this is, you are unequivocally, unquestionably a team whose probably target-ish win total is a high 80s win total. Like, your days of being in the mid-90s near 100 wins, they're gone right now. You're just not anymore.
On the season, they're 18th in runs scored.
Yeah.
So, yes, the most important stat that matters is how many runs have you actually scored with all of your fancy numbers.
And that's what I mean, because the OPS stuff, that factors into all the guys that get on base and move around on base, but that, you know, they're horrible with bases loaded. Boy, if they could just hit 250 with the bases loaded instead of 114 or whatever it is.
But what did we say, though? I mean, we said going into the season that it's going to probably be, if this is going to be a really competitive team, it's going to have to be a team that's based on pitching.
Sure.
And they showed signs of that early on, that, man, they could really lean into it.
Yep.
It's just now there's more question marks with the pitching now than there was a month ago.
Well, there's more, and that's worrisome. But along those lines, if you had, I wasn't expecting there to be nobody with an OPS of over 800 on this team. Like, Yordan Alvarez not being Yordan is a big deal that we're probably not making enough out of. Now he's injured, but even when he was playing, his OPS was in the 600s. Like, that's that they're 21 and 20, and maybe we should be giving them their props. Yordan Alvarez, is when he's rolling, is one of the five best hitters in baseball. I feel strongly about that. He's been largely bad all year. Not mediocre, not average. He's been bad for most of the year, and now he's been out. So not even the presence of Yordan. Like, even when Yordan is bad, you have to account for him as an opposing team and an opposing pitching staff. He's not even out there to do that. The middle of their order right now is Paredes, Walker hitting 220 or whatever it is, and Yiner or whoever it is you want to put behind Walker at five on any given day, and they're still 21 and 20. Like, maybe I should be glass half full about that, that with their best player being bad or injured all year, that they're still above 500 and they're two games out in the division right now.
To me, it feels highly unlikely that both Altuve and Yordan are going to struggle for the entire season.
I agree with you.
They're at plus 500, and I do feel even without Yordan and without classic Altuve, they've managed to put more life out there offensively in the last week or so, that you see the signs of, okay, what it could be as long as the pitching just, you know, pulls itself out of whatever difficulties they're having with certain guys.
Hey, who's this guy the Chronicle's writing about that's bringing crawfish to games?
Oh.
Wen Lee?
It's Wen Lee.
Yeah.
And he was he went kind of mini viral yesterday because he had a bag of crawfish that he had brought to the
People don't realize you can bring food to Minute Maid Park. They're cool
Yeah. And people, the biggest question and comment that kept coming up over and over again is, oh, yeah, how inconsiderate. I can't believe the people around you. You would subject the people around you to those crawfish. He doesn't eat the crawfish in his seat.
He doesn't bring a tray and put it on his lap.
He goes to one of those picnic tables there on the he goes to the concourse and eats it on a picnic table.
Okay. Well, how is that inconsiderate if he's eating it at a picnic table by himself?
It's not. They just saw him. They saw the picture of him standing in the stands before. It looks like well before the game was even on.
Okay.
Yeah, they thought that he was doing that well. The guy goes to 100 Astros games per year. Listen, you're allowed to criticize Wen Lee if you go to 100 Astros games per year.
Dude.
But if you go to 100 Astros games per year and you try to just eat nothing but the concessions the whole time, you're going to do two things. You're going to spend a few $1,000s and you might have a stroke.
Yeah.
So I applaud Wen Lee for his healthy and economical food choices.
If I went to 100 games a year spending what I normally, because I'd be with Amy, so I'm spending for two of us, we're usually like a couple of beers apiece and then some food, like either a hot dog or a pretzel. I mean, we're up close to $100 in concessions when we go to a game. Now, we don't go to that many games, but 100 games a year, if you did it on the Sean and Amy plan, that's $10,000 in concessions that you're spending. Let the guy bring his crawfish, everybody. He's not bothering you. He's just sitting at a picnic table.
And he's not. And he posted the picture, too, of him sitting at the picnic table eating it.
Does he
now,
bring...
he's not eating them with gloves.
Okay.
So I'm guessing people are thinking, like, okay, whether you eat them in the stands or whether you eat them in your seat or not, your hands are going to stink like crawfish.
They're going to stink, and it's really hard to get crawfish spices and stink off of your hands with one washing. You know, usually takes. Now, I can't, the for whatever reason, the Chronicle article's not scrolling on my computer. Does he bring the fixins with him, too? Does he have a couple corn cobs and potatoes? Okay.
He's got a couple corn cobs. You're only allowed to take whatever can fit in a gallon plastic bag. For him, it was 3 pounds of crawfish and a couple of corn cobs.
does he sit? I know you may not know the answers. I'm just picturing him laying out some paper towels and just dumping that bag like you do at a table at like a crawfish, you know, whatever crawfish eatery you go to. He's just twisting the heads and going to work.
He's got the bag in front of him, and then he's got a basket with some paper in it for the
heads
for the
and the tails. Yeah. You a crawfish guy? You like crawfish?
Nah, much, too labor intensive.
It's a lot of work. It's more of a social thing for me. I like doing it just because you're chit chatting and drinking beer while you're doing it.
I enjoy doing it whenever the situation arises, but I don't go seeking out the various crawfish spots. And
I always like the meal that I eat right after eating crawfish because crawfish don't fill me up. You know, that's always fun. I just spent 2 hours eating crawfish and now I'm hungry for a steak or something like that. They never fill me up ever.
Yeah, the thing about you that I'm always impressed is that you live a very quick and easy walk away from the dessert gallery there.
Yeah.
Although it's a stressful walk because you got to cross Richmond if you want to go to the dessert gallery. So you could drive. But that's every time I've left your place, I've stopped in at the dessert gallery for anywhere between one and seven desserts. Yeah.
So good.
They don't judge you there.
No.
If you go up and you get some cheesecake and then you're back 4 minutes later for a mega-sized brownie, they don't judge you. They call you sweetheart and everything.
I tell you where they get me when I go there. Yes, all the cakes and everything, but they've got that table right next to the line you stand in that has all the cookies right there. Individually wrapped cookies with the logos of the teams on them and things like that. You're like, oh, $5.50 for a Texans cookie? I love the Texans. Yes.
Do you know what? You know what? I didn't realize... My wife has been doing this the entire time I've been married to her, but I guess I never realized it, except that I guess because she doesn't eat all that many cupcakes. But we were at Mother's Day, and my sister-in-law had made cupcakes. And Brandy, what she does is she pulls the bottom. So it was a frosted cupcake.
Yeah.
And she pulls the bottom off
and
then puts it on top.
Ooh.
So it creates a cupcake sandwich. Well, really, it's an icing sandwich or a frosting sandwich because it's the cupcake with the bottom on the top and then you eat it like a sandwich.
That's an interesting sensation. So you got cake top and bottom with the frosting in the middle.
Yeah.
I like that. That matters.
But let me tell you this, because I've been cutting out refined sugar.
Yeah.
But it was a special occasion, so I said, okay, I'll have a cupcake. Let me tell you this, Sean.
Yeah.
The cupcake,
after
several weeks of zero refined sugar, and if it's in food, I don't eat it. If it's got any extra, too sweet. The cupcake was too sweet.
Really?
I didn't enjoy it.
Okay.
Had four.
Were you seeing things like pink elephants and stuff like that?
No, but I was kind of like, you know what? I'm not even really enjoying this. I better try the chocolate one.
That happens. Yeah, man.
And I tried after all four that I tried. They were still too sweet for me.
Well, it's good that you gave it a chance. You know, like I'm going to try a third one here and hope that maybe it tickles my fancy a little bit.
I had a high school history teacher, Daniel Olson, who was awesome, but he would have been in the Peace Corps when he was a young man. Yeah. And one time he was in Africa somewhere. And he made pancakes. He made pancakes for the kids in the village. And I think because he had his mom send him maple syrup and everything.
Oh, my God.
And they were like, none of them liked it. They were like, because the American diet hadn't infiltrated the rest of the world like it has by now.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were like, no, this is too sweet. Like children saying this is too sweet.
That's crazy. Yeah. That is wild.
They didn't like it at all.
Oh, my God. All right. Hey, text in. What's the weirdest thing you've seen someone bring to an Astros game to eat? Crawfish is going to be tough to beat. But text in 713-572-4610. Did ESPN scoop Michael Strahan's heat when it came to Bill Belichick yesterday? We've got the audio coming up next. Stay there. All right. Bill Belichick is doing an interview on Friday with Michael Strahan live on Good Morning America.
GMA.
Now, GMA.
So I call it in my household. I watch it during the game.
GMA.
During our show.
You do?
So it's just me watching Good Morning America.
Okay, good. Take notes during the interview on Friday while we're doing the show with Michael Strahan and Bill Belichick. So GMA is an ABC property, if I'm not mistaken. So maybe GMA was okay with Bill Belichick jumping on with SportsCenter yesterday, since they're all part of Disney, I guess. But he was on. Bill Belichick sat down and did an interview on SportsCenter with the SportsCenter anchor whose name escapes me right now, and I apologize.
Well, it's not. It's not like he's a football coach. He was on. It looked like they were at the Ritz-Carlton in Amelia Island. I'm guessing is the ACC having a conference there or something?
They might be because John Shire was on there as well. The head basketball coach at Duke.
He's doing normal football interviews and everything. It's not like this is the first time he speaks.
No, but it's the first time he's speaking since that CBS interview that's been such a big deal to everybody. I think this is kind of a big deal that. That ESPN got the first question about Jordan Hudson since the interview where she jumped in the middle of the thing didn't go to Michael Strahan. It was on this random SportsCenter interview yesterday, and here's what it sounded like.
I know that you're aware that your relationship with Jordan Hudson has been a headline over the last few months. And all of the specifics aside, because a lot has come out in the last couple of days, how do you think that impacts your ability to coach this football team, if at all?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, really off to the side. It's a personal relationship, and she doesn't have anything to do with UNC football. I'm excited to be back in the coaches' meetings and getting ready for, you know, June and then August when we get the training camp. So June will be a big recruiting month for us, and then August we'll start getting ready for the season.
Here's my point. The main thing that I wanted to see, at least, maybe I'm an outlier. The main thing I wanted to see from this Michael Strahan interview is he going to get asked about Jordan Hudson? And is his answer going to be at all revealing? Or is it going to be like what we just heard, which is she's off to the side. She's not part of the program. I'm really excited to coach football. Nah, 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 nah. That the suspense is removed from that now. Like that, that was, in my mind, the first time we were going to hear from him since the CBS interview.
Yeah.
This was the first. This thing we just played was the first crack that somebody's got at asking him about someone who's been a very controversial figure the last 2 weeks.
And it was very much like a lot of these interviews go. It was at the ACC meetings in Amelia Island,
If I'm
Florida.
Michael Strahan, I'm kind of like, hey, what the hell, man? We're promoting this interview. First giant, you know, like it's been positioned as like we're going to hear from Bill Belichick. First time since the CBS Sunday morning
interview.
They've
been saying that the first time since.
I think that's been sort of an assumption, maybe.
Right,
I don't know if
right.
they've been promoting it
that way.
That's
on them. That's stupid. He's a head college football coach. Is he supposed to hide from the media? He's at the ACC meetings. They've got ESPN's got their station set up there. It looked like they're at the hotel, you know, basically just probably talking to every coach in the ACC. That's on Good Morning America.
I totally agree with you. Like, my whole point isn't like to assign blame to it. It's that, like, I am way less interested in this Good Morning America interview now.
Well,
like, I know I already assume the answers are going to kind of be very like surface level and boring, but now we've got confirmation of
it. Okay, yeah, but you didn't. You should still anticipate it because I think Strahan, for one, he'll have more time and maybe in a different environment, he might press a little bit more or he might phrase the question differently. I mean, she basically phrased it in such a way of like, hey, this is no big deal, right? Like, hey, would you like a chance to give a no comment on this? So, I'm not crushing her for it. When you're in a football environment like that and they're doing everybody, like, it's just,
probably 4 minutes with him. It's an interview on Sports.
That's pretty much, what I expected.
Yeah.
I think the question will be more, I'm more intrigued to see how Strahan tries to broach the topic and if he asks a follow-up. You know? Like, if the woman doing the interview had asked a follow-up, I would have felt better about it.
Yeah.
But I think Strahan's probably going to try to come up with a creative way to kind of lead him into it.
Mm-hmm.
Because her question it was a football question. Yeah. It was, how does it affect the football program?
Yep.
Which is a fair question, but it was a very easy one to deflect.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just a little surprised seeing that yesterday, that just a kind of a throwaway interview on SportsCenter was plunked down there.
It was a really boring interview. It was 8 minutes, and it was really boring.
Yeah.
It was so boring.
Yeah,
it was incredibly boring.
Bunch of odds out on this interview coming up on Friday on what Belichick's going to wear, what color his shirt's going to be. I will say this. He definitely was not in a torn navy sweatshirt yesterday. Mm-hmm. Probably had to be dressed a little bit nicer because there's, you know, all his peers are there at some big conference event.
That's the way he typically dresses, like when you see him at the NFL owners meetings and everything.
Yeah.
So that navy sweater shirt that he was wearing is whatever owed to his dad or whatever in the CBS interview was just it's an odd look for a sit down interview with a network.
Do you think he wears North Carolina gear in this Strahan interview? You think he gets dressed up for this thing?
I bet he has he'll probably wear a suit.
Oh, yeah. You think?
Yeah, I think he'll wear a suit.
Okay.
Yeah, he cleans up pretty nice for certain events.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can bet on what color tie he's going to wear. Baby blue -200, navy blue +180. Yeah.
Yeah, baby blue, I think, for sure.
I think
that'll be with probably a UNC pin or something.
Something like that. I think he's got to rep the school in this thing. That was a bad job by him.
He should show up is that Manti Te'o sweater. Remember when Manti Te'o wore that?
On like Oprah or something after.
Yeah.
They had
recommended that he wear this like this pastel sweater. Same advice they gave to the Menendez brothers to make him feel more embraceable or likable or whatever, and it backfired.
Yeah. It was like a Cosby sweater that he wore, Manti Te'o, on that. It was like on Katie Couric, I think, is when he sat down and did that interview. Yeah. I think he sat down with Katie Couric. These odds makers have also put out a list of men who could be Jordan Hudson's next boyfriend, and they're all like, the youngest one is Urban Meyer. Like, that's the youngest one. They're all like Lou Holtz 50-1. That's the best. Oh my God, Lou Holtz 50-1, Anthony Hopkins 55-1, Robert De Niro 66-1, Al Pacino 80-1, John Travolta. Boy, you really start to get down to the bottom here, and there's guys in their 80s and 90s. Harrison Ford 250-1. That's pretty funny.
She's like an inverted Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes.
This one.
Yeah, yeah. Leonardo DiCaprio likes those young supermodels. She likes guys who go eat at the early bird special with.
I didn't get this one. One of them is which school will be on Belichick's clothing. I guess would that be the question of whether he might do Naval Academy?
Navy
or
again, I guess.
He was wearing the Navy.
What are the choices?
Well, he's promoting the book, and it sounds like his upbringing with his dad, who was with the Naval Academy forever.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe that's why he would go with Navy.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, more Navy to that last CBS interview, so we'll see what happens. UNC, the heavy favorite. So the people think he's going to clean himself up and rep UNC in this interview with Michael Strahan. I guess I'm still looking forward to it. I don't want to feel like the 17 seconds we just played ruined the interview for me or anything like that. But I was anxious to see what an answer about Jordan Hudson would sound like, and now I've got my answer on that.
I like this on the odds board. What will happen first? Belichick is fired at the end of the 2025 season, or Belichick breaks up with his girlfriend.
Ooh, okay.
Right, even odds on that one.
So that's a 50-50. Either he gets fired at the end of the year, or so basically the question is, does he break up with her between now and the end of the year?
Right.
Yeah.
But what if she breaks up with him? That's where it gets dicey in trying to collect on this thing. People always have different versions of how it happened.
Yeah.
They're going to say, the public statement will say it was mutual.
Yep.
If they deliver one.
Yeah.
So then you're left kind of wondering what the hell. I wouldn't make that bet just because I think it's going to end up being, they'll cancel the bet because of the murkiness of the girlfriend.
Do you think it's more likely he ends up marrying this girl or they end up breaking up at some point?
That's a great question.
Right?
I can almost see Belichick marrying her out of obstinacy. Like at some
just
point,
to
like
stick it to everybody else.
Everybody said I couldn't do it.
That's right.
They said I couldn't win a Super Bowl, and yeah, Look what happened. And now I'm gonna marry this woman.
You know who? You know who probably gets upset about that? The longtime girlfriend that he had, that he never married, but he was just with her for all those years. I forget her name. The blonde.
Yeah.
She'd probably be like, "Why wasn't I marrying material?" You know, especially when it's Jordan Hudson who you'd be marrying. She seems like a handful.
You know, the thing about Belichick is, because he's obviously not on social media or anything, but we know he does read or at least he has people, you know, curate and give him the articles that he needs to read. I wonder if he's gone I wonder if he is intentionally ignorant of everything that's being written about him when it comes to Jordan Hudson, or if he actually is tapped into it so he does understand the firestorm that it is.
He's stopped doing the cheesy pictures and videos with her. So there's got to be somebody, because he had the pictures of where he had her like on the end of a fish hook like a mermaid. She was dressed in a mermaid's outfit. He was doing a lot of cheesy stuff on social media with her.
Yeah.
It feels like that's been tamped back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like so I'm thinking maybe people have been getting to him saying, hey, you know, like that whole thing where you're pushing her up on you're doing that Titanic pose with her on your feet when you're laying on the ground. Like that's kind of, I don't know, kind of cheesy maybe. I think maybe some people are getting to him. We'll see. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Which Texans are trending up? Which Texans are trending down? Jonathan Alexander has a piece in the Chronicle about this. We'll go through these. We'll see if we agree with the trending up and trending down of some of your Houston Texans. That is coming up next. Payne and Pendergast, Houston Texans. They were on the field, OTAs yesterday. We've had rookie minicamp. We've had a whole offseason. Jonathan Alexander of the Houston Chronicle does a nice job covering the Texans on the Texans beat. He's got the players or groups that are trending up and ones that are trending down, Seth. So we want to go through here and see and grade Jonathan, see how he did on these.
Grade Jonathan on whether these guys are trending up or down.
That's
no,
right.
I don't want to criticize. I think his are all pretty fair, but there's some wiggle room here where I feel like a couple of these might be players who are trending up or down based more so on press coverage than anything else.
There's not much else to go from. You know, like they haven't done much this offseason. We'll start with the trending up. C.J. Stroud. Well, let's start right at the top. The quarterback says, we haven't heard much from Stroud in the form of podcasts, and that's largely by design. The quarterback has spent much of his time in Houston training with his teammates and focusing on what will be a pivotal third season.
Okay, I'm going to say that is a little bit presumptive because we don't know for sure if he's trending up. We've seen positive developments in terms of things that could help him, but at the end of the day, we don't know exactly what Nick Caley is as an offensive coordinator, and you hope that he's really good, but you just flat out don't know. He has no record of it, and it's all just a big It's a big black hole right now. So yeah. I can't say that CJ Stroud's trending up until I actually see it on the field. It's not the one thing that'll be interesting is that, you know, last year I feel like some of his accuracy issues were a little bit overblown, partly because there were some plays that on the TV broadcast looked like bad throws. But then when you go back and watch from the end zone on the All-22, there were actually incredible throws that were incompletions.
Yeah.
But he was getting hit as he was throwing it. But there were more instances of some erratic throws mm-hmm. than we saw out of CJ before. So during training camp, I think just seeing the precision, hopefully, and seeing the best version of him and his accuracy, and if there were injuries that were leading him to be a little bit more inaccurate last year, maybe that's the explanation for it. But I can't say he's trending up yet. They've done things to help him, but we don't know if any of the draft picks are going to be any good until we see it on the field. I'm optimistic about them, but you don't know if they're going to be any good. They've made changes to help him on the offensive line, but he did lose Laremy Tunsil as a pass protector. We don't know if any of that's going to pay off. So he's not trending up yet in my mind.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about where we're at. And this is probably more than just CJ. This is more about the offense. Obviously, CJ is the catalyst for all this, though, of like how we're feeling about the group that they've got right now versus the group they had this time last year. Because I think this time last year, we probably felt, with Stephon Diggs coming into this team and Joe Mixon coming onto this team, and you already had Tank Dell and Nico Collins. And I think the feeling with the offensive line was that it was going to get better because it was the second year in Bobby Slowick's system. And it got worse with the offensive line. Those receivers got banged up and injured. Joe Mixon was great and Nico Collins were great. CJ was very up and down last year. And yet, like, I felt over the moon about stuff last year. This year, I don't feel as optimistic as I did during the spring last year, but I do feel more optimistic than I did at the end of the season last year. You know, like, I think they're going to be better than they were at the end of last year offensively.
Yeah, I have a hard and fast rule that you don't look at a rookie, whether he's a first rounder, seventh rounder, or anything else. You don't look at a rookie as an improvement until he actually proves it on the field
mm-hmm.
because you just don't know until they get there. So, one of the paragraphs that Jonathan had, he says, while the offensive line remains a concern, a deeper and improved receiver group should help Stroud continue to develop and make up for some of what they lack up front. I'm not convinced that they're an improved receiver group yet.
Right.
You got two rookies that you're optimistic about, but you're replacing Stephon Diggs with Christian Kirk. And I think Christian Kirk is slept on a little bit in some of the offseason discussion. But beyond that, you've got rookies. You've got Braxton Berrios is much more of a special teamer than he is a receiver. And I'm not so sure that this is definitively an improved receiver.
Well, and let's take Jaden Higgins, who was their first pick, their first draft pick, 34th overall. And then look, he looks the part. He looks great. He looks like a physical specimen. He was super productive in college. Pretend for a second that John Metchie had not gotten sick before his rookie year. John Metchie was picked 44th overall in his draft class. Jaden Higgins was picked 34th overall. They're in the same neighborhood. Us already putting the cart ahead of the horse with Jaden Higgins. Imagine if we had done that with a healthy John Metchie. And John Mechie's now been healthy, and you can see John Metchie can play in the NFL, but he's not a guy that you go, boy, this is going to take an offense to another level. You're right. You're absolutely right. You do have to see what it's like. Let's see what it's like going up against Derek Stingley or Kamari Lassiter in practice before we anoint him. You know,
that kind of thing. I am optimistic that CJ is going to play better this year because they've made enough attempts to improve that at least a few of them are going to work out. And the biggest X factor by far is just Nick Caley and whether he's good for CJ Stroud or if they're looking for a new offensive coordinator 2 years from now.
I want to make sure we get in the other two trending ups. One is Nico Collins. I don't know we need to spend a ton of time on Nico Collins other than he's trending up in that they got him some help. It would appear hopefully if these rookies pan out. And hopefully he can stay healthy. That's the big thing, if he's taking steps to stay healthy this offseason.
Yeah, his health is really the only concern. As far as trending up, that's just a continuation of a guy who's been in the last – I almost called 2023 his rookie year because it felt like it in some respects.
Yeah.
But since these last couple years, especially since being matched with C.J. Stroud, yes, you've seen the absolute best version of him.
Ladarius Henderson's the third one that I felt like we needed to hit because this is a name that's burst onto the scene here of late. Nick Caserio, unprompted on our show a week and a half ago, or a week ago. Is it a week ago? Thereabouts. over the moon praise for Ladarius Henderson. It was a week ago today. And then obviously he's got a bit of a cult following on the internet and whatnot. And he's shown a lot. D'Amico had a lot of good things to say about
him. He's trending up in that. And I'll say this is viable, but because the fact that Casario and D'Amico have both spoken very highly of him in a way that, you know, isn't just the standard, well, let's see whatever about this young guy. But it doesn't mean that he's going to be an all-pro guard all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But he's definitely trending up. Compared to what you were thinking about Ladarius Henderson when he was out with his dual foot injuries last year. Yeah, he's way up.
The trending down names are interesting to me because it looks like, without having read the paragraphs that Jonathan Alexander has written underneath each of these guys' names, the trending down guys are all guys who the team drafted guys at their position. Running back Damian Pierce, trending down. They drafted Woody Mark. Woody Mark, you don't get five words into the paragraph until Woody Marks is mentioned. He puts Mechie, Xavier Hutchinson, and Braxton Berrios in one entry with each other. And obviously they drafted Jalen Knoll and Jaden Higgins. Those guys' jobs are threatened by them. And then Blake Fisher is the other trending down. Obviously they drafted Ariante Ursary with a second-round pick, so now Blake Fisher would appear to be in some degree of competition. Of all those names that are trending down, what's the most interesting one to you, Seth?
I guess the most interesting one is, I guess it's Blake Fisher.
Me too.
I was tempted to say Damian Pierce. I mean, Damian Pierce, the Texans traded up, and it felt like in a little bit of a character break for Nick. It felt like that was specifically for that one player, not a band of players or what have you. And they drafted Woody Marks, who has a skill set that Damian Pierce doesn't, in terms of just being a super speedy receiving threat. The part where I don't think it's a trend down necessarily is that I think they still want to have a backup who's an all-purpose type of dude, mm-hmm. like Damian Pierce for Joe Mixon. Yeah. So then it's more competition in the O-line room. Blake Fisher, when the Texans trade up, and whether it's to specifically draft Ursary or just a band of players right there, They took a guy in the second round in Blake Fisher last year, and now they're drafting a guy in the second round to get an offensive tackle. It's certainly way more competition for Blake Fisher than there was before the draft. I think before the draft, we were talking about, okay, well, Blake Fisher, if he plays well enough, then maybe Titus Howard will play guard. Now it turns into, all right, well, if Ursary plays really well, then maybe they'll start him at right tackle, and Titus Howard will still move down to guard, and Blake Fisher will be out of the equation.
Yeah, I think I would imagine the hope is that eventually you found your two starting tackles with those two second-round picks. But for the purposes of 2025, that won't be the case, unless something happens to Cam Robinson. That won't be the case.
Yeah, I think when Casario's looking at it, I don't think that they probably factored Blake Fisher into the equation in their decision to draft an offensive tackle as much as it feels like. It's more so that they have Cam Robinson at left tackle on a 1-year deal.
Yeah.
And they probably don't look at him as a long they can't plan on him being a long term solution.
Yeah, I think if you go into 2026 and Ariante Ursary is your starting left tackle and Blake Fisher is your starting right tackle, if I had to guess just blindly, I would say then some things went pretty well for you over the course of 2025 with both those players, you know?
Yeah. Christian Harris trending down. I think I put him in a separate category altogether.
He has a few players in to be determined. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Jimmy Ward, it's not indeterminate for me with Jimmy Ward. He's injured every year and he's getting into his mid-30s. So like I feel like he is what he is.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to be used probably, you know, here and there, however they see fit, but probably, hopefully not a full-time player. I'd like to have him for 17 games mm-hmm. in the playoffs, which would mean a little bit of load management
for
him.
Yeah, it's a good list. Jonathan, good job. I like that. Trending up, trending down as the Texans continue here. Schedule release coming up tonight, so we'll know more. We'll know everything about when the Texans are going to play all these opponents on their schedule. All right, into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Let's circle over to the Rockets. There are things going on in the NBA playoffs right now that might mean that the store is open in places other than just Milwaukee and Phoenix. And are the Rockets going to be at the top of lists like these throughout the offseason? We'll have that for you coming up next.